The host of the following program invites your questions and comments live on air by calling 1-888-678-9597. The phone lines are open now. 1-888-678-9597.
Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. It's Peter Schiff. It's Wednesday, November 25th, 2009. Another new episode of Wall Street Unspun. Hi, everybody. I just landed on my flight from New York to Florida. The plane was very late, so unfortunately, I didn't get to my mother's house in time to do the show from a landline. So I'm doing it from a cell phone, so the quality might not be that great. And I actually don't have that much of a charge, so I might have to cut off, go to the trunk, get my charger. Oh, wait a minute. I don't have it. I don't have the plug. So if the cell phone dies, it'll take me a while because I'm going to have to call back from using a different cell phone. Anyway, I'm going to do the best I can, and hopefully, you know, before the show is over, I will get to my destination and be able to switch to a landline and finish up the show. Anyway, I'm still trying to take calls. It'll be a little awkward because I can't see the board. I don't have my laptop. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, anyway, we've had a pretty eventful week. The dollar index today, finally, as I've been forecasting for many, many weeks, has finally decisively broken down below that 75 level, that support level on the dollar index. We closed down at 74.20, right on the low of the day. Dollar just basically got crushed across the board. Against the Japanese yen, the dollar is at a 14-year low. The dollar is worth just 87 yen. And I remember for a brief moment back in 1995, the dollar went down to 80 yen. And I think we're going back down there again. Ultimately, I think we'll take out the 80 yen level, in which case I think there's nothing but air in the chart. And I think the dollar could make a beeline down towards 50 yen. As far as the other currencies are concerned, the euro closed at new highs, new 52-week highs, not a new record high. But a new high for the year. The euro's back above 151, closing in at 152. The Swiss franc closed above a dollar, I believe, for the first time ever. So this is the first time the Swiss franc has been worth more than a dollar. Now, when we first went off the gold standard in 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window, you could buy a Swiss franc for just 23 cents. The currency now is appreciated more than fourfold against the U.S. dollar since we severed the dollar's link from gold. And, of course, this isn't the end. Now that the Swiss franc is above a dollar, you know, there's no chart resistance. Who knows how much higher the Swiss franc is going to go? The Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar was strong today. Dollar is just weak across the board. Gold continues its record surge. It's had nine consecutive record closes. 9 days in a row, gold was up another $15 or $20 today. We're almost at $1,200 an ounce on the price of gold. Gold stocks are following, not leading gold. Gold stocks have still not taken out their highs from 2008, and neither has silver. Silver is now closing in on $19 an ounce, but the last time gold touched 1,000, silver went above 20. So what that still shows me is that you still don't have a lot of speculative money moving into the metals. If we did, we'd see silver outperforming gold, and we'd see the gold stocks leading the way. That's not happening. There still is a lot of doubt. The metals are climbing a wall of worry. I've done a few television shows this week, and I've watched others, and more people are worried about this gold rally. There's all this talk about a gold bubble. Gold could collapse. Be careful. Don't buy gold. Meanwhile, gold is climbing this wall of worry. I think it will continue to climb this wall, you know, probably up to $2,000 an ounce before some of the doubters come on board and understand what's really going on. You know, it's interesting that people are so quick to point to a bubble in gold, yet they didn't see the bubble in the stock market in the 1990s. They didn't see the bubble in the housing market. And now they think there's one in gold. And, of course, they're wrong. And I would remind listeners that, you know, I've been hearing this talk about a gold bubble. You know, I think since gold hit $400 an ounce, and, you know, back in 2006, I wrote a rather funny commentary because there was a lot of call about a gold bubble back then, and I forget if gold was at $400 or $500 an ounce, but, you know, it's obviously well more than that now, but there was a lot of talk of a gold bubble, and I wrote a piece, a commentary, it's on my website. I saw it. Somebody had referenced it recently in a blog. It came up in a Google search. But, you know, I wrote that no evidence to my mind that there was a bubble because there simply wasn't a lot of interest in gold among the public in general, that very few people actually owned gold, that knew about gold, had any idea where to buy gold. I came up with the idea of maybe standing on a corner and just asking random people where they bought their gold. My guess was that nobody would have an answer because nobody was buying it. And I also came up with a David Letterman-type list, a top 10 list of top 10 signs of a gold bubble. And I think it's pretty funny if you read it, but you know, nothing has actually happened. I think even though the price has more than doubled since then, maybe close to tripled, I still don't think a lot of people are buying gold. I mean, I do see quite a few commercials now on CNBC and like, and some of the radio shows for gold dealers. And of course, you know, they're obviously making a lot of money now, and they're able to buy commercials. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, it's really gotten to the point where, you know, many Americans are even, you know, buying gold. I think most of the commercials I see are for trying to convince Americans to sell their gold. You know, all these Casper Gold programs, bring in your jewelry and get cash. They're big. And that's because people don't understand the real value of gold because they have real money, gold, and they're selling it for paper and they're getting a fraction of what it's worth. So I think, you know, that's still a sign that people don't appreciate this. The fact that gold stocks are still as low as they are shows there's not a lot of wild speculation in these stocks. Silver, again, not a lot of speculation. I'm still waiting for the first takeover of a gold stock by a foreign sovereign wealth fund. I mean, you know that's coming. I mean, another catalyst for the big move in gold today is India came out and commented that they're interested in buying more of the IMF gold. Remember, India bought 200 metric tons for close to $7 billion a couple of weeks ago, and gold has already appreciated by better than 10% since they made that purchase. They're talking about buying more. Other central banks need to buy. China, you know, China has a lot of gold buying to do. China has only 1.5% of its reserves in gold, and China has more foreign currency reserves than any other central bank in the world, yet they have the smallest percentage of reserves in gold. China has a lot of gold to buy, and you know, I think they're going to start doing it soon. You know, China is now the largest gold producer, but I think most of the gold that's being produced out of Chinese mines is not going to make it into the market. It's going to go to the vaults of the Central Bank of China that needs real money behind its currency because it knows it's got nothing but worthless dollars at this point. But I think it makes a lot of sense for a foreign central bank or a sovereign wealth fund to just buy up a mining company, buy out Newmont, buy out Barrick, pay twice or three times what it's currently trading at. What do they care? Because now they own their production. They can move all that gold that's being pulled out of the ground into their vaults because there's not enough above-ground gold for China to get anywhere near what it needs to have a better balance of reserves when you've only got 1.5% of your reserves in gold. I mean, India, even with its new purchase, it's only got about 7%. Most of the major central banks of developed countries, they have more like 30% of their reserves in gold. But these emerging market economies that have been loading up on dollars over the past few years, that's all they got. And meanwhile, they can see what's happening to the price of gold. They have they got to buy more. You know, and you watch a lot of these the pundits on these financial shows trying to figure out what's going on in the markets. You know, I saw a group of guys on there talking about they're worried that maybe there could be a sudden rise in the dollar, and that's going to hurt the markets and hurt gold. And, you know, they still don't understand what the dynamic is. They think it's the weak dollar that's making stocks go up, and that if the dollar goes up, that stocks will go down. And they don't really understand. It's not necessarily the weak dollar. It's the government that's making the dollar weak, and stocks appear to be strong. The government is keeping interest rates too low. The Federal Reserve's got interest rates too low. They're running these huge deficits. They're printing all this money. That's debasing the dollar. And that's why the dollar is going down. And that's why you need more dollars to buy stocks, because the stocks, the dollar is losing value faster than stocks. But the only way to get a meaningful rise in the dollar is for the government to stop doing what it's been doing to debase it. They need a substantial increase in interest rates. They need to tighten up on monetary policy. The Fed needs to start selling all of the government bonds and mortgage-backed bonds that they've been buying. We need the government to start cutting back on the deficits. But none of that's going to happen. I mean, there isn't a prayer of that happening anytime soon. So people that are worried that the dollar might rally, you know, it ain't going to happen. But it's also crazy. You know, I hear these guys talking about the dollar weakness. One of the commentators actually said, or several commentators actually, when is it going to be too much of a good thing? You know, when is the dollar going down, if it keeps going down, going to stop being a good thing? Well, it's never been a good thing. It's always a bad thing. When your currency goes down, you get poorer. You know, that's why, you know, it's bad. You know, one of the guys on Fast Money this week asked me, you know, what am I afraid of? You know, as a gold buyer, what keeps me up at night? What makes me afraid that gold might go down? And I had to correct him and say, there's a lot of things that frighten me, but none of them have to do with gold. It's because I'm afraid of what the government is doing. I'm afraid of the dollar losing value. That's why I own gold. I sleep well at night because I have gold. If I had paper, I'd be tossing and turning. These guys still don't understand what this is. And it's, you know, one guy in Fast Money was saying, well, you know, one day, you know, there could be a stampede to get out of gold as soon as it starts to fall. And he doesn't understand that the stampede is to get out of the dollar. That's what has no intrinsic value. That's when people get that Wild E. Coyote moment where they've walked off the edge of a cliff, but they haven't looked down. And it's not until they look down and see they're not standing on anything that they fall. And when people look down beneath the dollar and realize, you know, where they're standing, it's a long way down. So I don't look for a rush to get out of gold. I look for the rush to be out of the dollar. And you constantly hear, you know, the commentators talking about the orderly decline of the dollar. And they keep saying that, well, the dollar going down is okay as long as it's orderly. Well, I mean, there's nothing okay about losing your money in an orderly fashion. You still lose your money. You know, if you don't want to lose your money, you've got to get out of the dollar. But as more people start to understand that this orderly dollar decline is going to go on for years and the dollar is going to lose a lot of money, it's all of a sudden it's not going to be orderly anymore, because there will be a rush to get rid of the dollar. That rush might be starting. We'll see what happens over this Thanksgiving holiday. The U.S. markets are closed tomorrow, only have a half day trading on Friday. We'll see what happens tonight overseas if the traders take the dollar higher and take the dollar lower rather, and start bidding gold prices higher. This could turn into something pretty substantial. And certainly for the last month of the year, I think seasonally the fourth quarter has been pretty bad for the dollar, particularly during years where the dollar has already been falling. I think the trends tend to accelerate, and so now that we're below these key levels, the only real support left and the dollar index is around the 70, 71 level, 72. That was the all-time low for the dollar index that it hit in 2008, just before the financial crisis kicked into a higher gear, and you had that temporary, knee-jerk, a head fake rally into the dollar. Once we take out that low, there's nothing in the charts to support it, and I don't think there's going to be any central bank intervention. We're not going to get any rate hikes by the Fed. That would be the only thing that could temporarily halt the dollar's fall. So it could get pretty ugly between now and the end of the year. Meanwhile, stocks keep going up. You know, U.S. stocks, they're not making new highs, but, you know, they're inching higher. The weak dollar isn't derailing them. The bond market is still hanging in there. The weakness of the bond market still hasn't, hit the dollar. But, you know, a lot of the financial commentators, when they try to argue with me about the fact that I say there's all this inflation, they like to point to the bond market as evidence that there's no inflation, because the yields on the 10-year or the 30-year government bonds are still so low. And I always have to point out that that's not a real market, because it's being manipulated by central banks and speculators who are in there, that there are no real buyers. And whenever I ask a commentator who's asking me this question, I say, well, are you buying any 10-year government bonds? And they say no. And I say, why not? They'll say the yield. And they say, because the yields are too low. And then I said, well, why are they too low? Because you know that there's inflation. And they don't know anybody. I don't know anybody. No individual investors are buying these bonds. So to try to say that there's no inflation because bond yields are low, you know, misses the point that nobody who's worried about inflation is buying these bonds. The people who are buying the bonds are central banks that couldn't care less about inflation. They're buying them to try to artificially prop up the dollar, or a lot of U.S. financial institutions are buying treasuries because they're borrowing money for practically nothing from the Fed and loaning it back to the U.S. government at 4%. What do they care that they're only getting 4%? They're borrowing for free, and they're making the spread, and they're doing it on leverage, and they're making these profits. But this is all a trade. This isn't any real demand. What's happening in the gold market, with gold at $1,200 an ounce, that's a much better indication of the fact that inflation is here and about to get a lot worse. You know what I saw when Geithner, was testifying before Congress a few days ago, and they were grilling him a little bit. He said that every single measure of investor confidence in the U.S. markets has gone up since Barack Obama took office. Well, the gold market begs to differ. The fact that the gold is making a record high and that the U.S. dollar is making a record low, that's a big vote of no confidence. I don't know how Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, can look at a falling dollar and surging gold prices as vindication that the world has confidence in our financial system. He's got it completely backwards. If they had confidence in a financial system, they would be buying dollars. They wouldn't be fleeing dollars. And so, you know, I think we've got to understand that this, you know, could be a new event unfolding. And, you know, unfortunately, the longer the government waits and the Federal Reserve rates to try to rein in this liquidity, to raise interest rates, the worse it's going to get. And unfortunately, as long as unemployment is high, these guys are not going to do anything. And it's amazing to me how many people I hear that, well, as long as unemployment is high, that we can't have inflation. And the Fed's not going to raise rates with high unemployment, because high unemployment means no inflation. Again, they've got it completely backwards. If you look throughout history, you look at the correlation is high unemployment equals high inflation. Because what happens is when you have a lot of people unemployed, people aren't producing stuff, so you have less production. Also, when a lot of people are unemployed, they're not paying taxes. So the governments have bigger deficits, so they have to print even more money. So it's high unemployment that leads to a reduction in supply of goods and an excess creation of money. So you get all these forces pushing prices up. So the more we have unemployed, the higher inflation is going to be. It's amazing that all these top economists have got it completely backwards. You know, and also, it still bothers me when I hear them trying to say that, well, unemployment is really not high compared to other peaks. They say, after all, it was a little higher in 1982. It peaked at like 10.5%, and we're only 10.2%. And, of course, the Great Depression was 20%. But they always forget to remind everybody that back in 1982, we counted the disgruntled workers. We counted the people who were working part-time who wanted to work full-time. So it's not apples to oranges. It doesn't seem like this is rocket science. If we calculate unemployment today the way they did it if we calculated it today the way they calculated it in 1982, unemployment is 17.5%. It's well above where it was in 1982, and it's almost as bad as it was during the Great Depression. And you know what? This depression is just getting started. And if we continue to follow the plans that Congress has, who knows how high unemployment is going to get in real terms? Could it hit 25%? Could it hit 30%? Absolutely, because what they're doing is destroying jobs, it's destroying business investments, it's destroying opportunity. They've got all sorts of tax increases in the pipeline on small business, on entrepreneurs. Who would hire anybody? It's impossible. Meanwhile, with massive inflation and a dollar collapse, they are chasing all the investment capital out of the country. Without investment capital, there's no jobs, because you can't have a job without capital. You need tools. Workers need equipment. Without the equipment they got, you know, there's no job. And, of course, the businessman, the business owner, the small business owner, needs to believe he can make a profit, you know, on labor and capital. But in this environment where we're vilifying the businessman, where we got to raise taxes on the rich for everything that they can think of, this is going to be some serious, serious trouble. Anyway, let me see what I can do with the phones. I'm not really sure who's on hold because I can't see the board. But if they want to throw through a caller, I'll be happy to take it.
Hey, Peter?
Yes.
Peter, this is Jim from California.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good, good. Hey, Peter, I just had two quick questions and a comment. Full disclosure here, I just started working with a couple of your guys out here on the West Coast to open up a EuroPac account. Hemet and Andrew Polsky, I believe his name is, and I'm very happy about that. But I got to tell you, there are a few things that I'm watching here that I'm a little bit concerned about. Prior to working with you guys, I've just been managing my own accounts, and I've been heavily invested in precious metals. I stayed home today and watched CNBC. I've been sick. And I got to tell you, CNBC seems like it's turned into the freaking gold channel, man. I mean, I saw...
They talk about gold a lot on CNBC because it makes a new high every day, so they have to talk about it. But if you look at how they talk about it, they don't know why it's going up. They talk about it being a bubble. They talk about the fact that people are, you know, it's going to fall and people are going to lose a lot of money. So I don't think the fact that they're talking about gold is a sign that means gold has gone up too much, you know, when they're all buying it. You know, and I talk to these guys. None of them own it. Every time I see these announcers, have you bought any gold yet? No, I don't have any gold. I mean, people still don't buy it. So, you know.
Okay. Well, I shouldn't be so. Part of my concern is that I've got some really great gains this year, and it just watching all that makes it feel frothy. But you know what?
As I said, I don't think people should have all their money in gold. I mean, I don't have all mine in gold and gold stocks. I have a lot. But I also have other asset classes. I mean, my main key is to stay out of the U.S. Because I see a lot of problems for our economy and a lot of problems for our currency. But, you know, you don't get any dividends on gold. So if you want to get income from your portfolios, it's good to have other things in the mix. Anyway, hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Hey, also, I wanted to mention, too, I forgot to talk about the Senate race. You know, things are shaping up in the Senate race quite a bit. I mean, I was the fifth candidate to enter the race for the Republican nomination for the Senate in Connecticut. So when I came in, I was fifth, so I was in fifth place. And just recently, I was able, in the polls, even though I haven't really kicked off my campaign, we're really kicking off into high gear starting in December. But the most recent polls showed me passing the guy that was in fourth place, and so getting to fourth place. And just a couple of days ago, this individual announced that he's dropping out of the race. Instead of running for the United States Senate, he's going to run for the House of Representatives, and he's running in one of the congressional districts here in Connecticut. So he left the race. And then also on the same day, another guy who had entered the race maybe about a month before I did, who was a former ambassador to Ireland, a Bush fundraiser, he said that he's probably going to drop out to run for governor in Connecticut, because the Republican incumbent not too long ago announced that she would not seek re-election. So all of a sudden, the field is narrowed from 5 to 3, with me being one of the three. So now, instead of having a 1 in 5 shot, you know, I've got a 1 in 3 shot. So the odds are certainly moving in my favor, and I passed two people very quickly. And if you look at the field, who I'm running against an establishment Republican politician, a guy that's been in the House 3 terms, you know, pushing 70 years old. He's not, you know, he's basically, you know, going to toe the party line. He's, you know, he's, you know, been very moderate to liberal in a voting record in the House. He's trying to be more of a, you know, anti-Obama. You know, he's trying to, you know, incorporate the Tea Parties and trying to get involved in those. But I think it's just a situation where he has his finger in the air, and he's seeing where the wind blows, and he sees that there's a backlash, and he's trying to become, you know, a conservative when he was in the past. And then you've got Linda McMahon, who's, you know, in the wrestling fame. Her and her husband built this wrestling empire, and, you know, she's a businesswoman, but she's in show business. I mean, her, you know, she and it's a very, you know, controversial form of entertainment at best, with all the sex and violence. And so, you know, yeah, she's a businesswoman, and she can probably make the argument that we need a businessman in Congress as opposed to a career politician. But once you decide you want a businessman, who do you want? You want somebody in pro wrestling, a showman, or do you want somebody who's actually, you know, in finance, that understands economics? And, you know, I run a business too. You know, I run a small business, and I understand. I mean, the majority of our businesses are relatively small, and, you know, they're dealing with all the same problems, the same issues that I do. I mean, she runs a much, much larger enterprise than I do. And so I think that my business experience is probably more relevant to the typical American and to where the jobs really come from in our economy. And more importantly, you know, I'm in economics. I'm in finance. I have a real grasp and understanding of the problems facing our economy. She doesn't. So I think in that field, I think I do really well. So I think for those of you who have been supporting me, I think we have a lot more reasons to be optimistic. Also, the website continues to evolve at shiftforsenate.com. So if you haven't been there lately, take a visit to shiftforsenate.com, my website. And remember to donate. I mean, we need to get as much money as we can in donations. And for the volunteers, we've got over 15,000 people who have now volunteered. The counter is still wrong, over 15,000 people. Hopefully by next week, we will have the volunteer database ready so the volunteers can start making the phone calls. I think this is going to really revolutionize campaigning. So I'm really excited and looking forward to that. And also, our new campaign headquarters are opening up December 1st. That's going to be great. And so I think things are really starting to pick up in the campaign front. Anyway, let me go back to the calls. Who's next? Do I have a caller on hold?
Hello? Hey, Peter.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
How's it going? I'm a college student, and I picked up some junior gold stocks a few months back on the Toronto Exchange. I've realized some nice gains, and I'm having a tough time right now deciding whether to buy, sell, or hold. My question is, assuming there's going to be a significant correction in U.S. markets in the near future, how will this affect a lot of these gold stocks?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a significant correction in U.S. markets in nominal terms. The trend looks very powerful. The market is going up. It's going up for all the wrong reasons. It's not going up because the economy is recovering. It's going up despite the fact that it's not recovering. It's going up because of inflation. And what's really happening is the value of our money is going down. If you look at the value of the Dow in terms of gold, we're just cracking through 9 ounces of gold. The Dow is losing value in real terms, and that might continue. The government is pursuing a policy, and if they pursue it enough, they could make sure that nominal stock prices keep going up. So I don't know if we're going to get a pullback or not. And so I'm still investing on the long term, and I'm riding out. And I know that it was tough for a lot of my clients in 2008. We had a very big decline in 2008. My bet is that that was an aberration. I don't think it's going to happen again. It's not impossible. And we have to be prepared for the possibility. My clients are not on leverage. We're not on margin. If we do have that kind of short-term hit again, I'm confident we'll be bouncing back just like we bounced back in 2009. But my gut tells me that 2008 was the aberration, that that flight to safety into the dollar will not happen again, that the next flight to safety will be a flight from the dollar. And so I think with foreign currencies and commodities strengthening, that should help out the foreign markets that and the stocks that we're buying. And the dividends are still good. So I'm still staying the course. I mean, that's my approach, that I want to buy real things. I want to buy value. I want to buy income. It is an inflationary world. It's creating too much money. All the other foreign central banks are following our lead, you know, and we're leading them down the path to inflation. So I think you've got to invest with that outlook.
So if there is a correction, do you feel that this time around, you know, for instance, the gold bug index will be more decoupled from the market in general, and you know, we might not get as hurt as we may have.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is, I mean, if you go back to 2008, gold stocks took a huge hit. Gold stocks were down, you know, 70%. Right? There was, I know. I mean, my personal portfolio was 50%, more than 50% gold stocks, and it got crushed. Some of my gold stocks were down 80-90%. 80-90%. And so those are huge. Now, a lot of my stocks I own now are up 500%, 700%, some 1,000%. So they've come back. Some of them are actually higher than they were. It's amazing. And it was a spectacular decline. I don't know that it's going to happen again. Given how quickly it came back, I'm sure a lot of people who panicked and sold their gold stocks in late 2008, early 2009, they're pissed that they did that, and they had to buy them back higher. I don't think they're going to be quick to sell them again, especially with all these foreign central banks buying.
Even with all these record highs, would you feel comfortable entering at this level?
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't have to enter myself. I mean, I already have a lot of gold stocks, and I bought a lot more for myself when the market went down. I mean, that's why, you know, my portfolio in 2008, right, it was down, you know, more than 50%. You know, I took a huge hit. But what I did personally is I bought a lot more gold stocks that went down and some non-gold stocks. And so now my investments have not only recouped, this is my personal account, everything that I lost in 2008, but I now have significant profits above what my highs were in 2008. So that sell-off was a blessing in disguise, although for me, it wasn't in disguise. I knew it was a blessing, but there were a lot of people who, you know, didn't have my conviction, who were very nervous when the market went down. I mean, you know, that Wall Street Journal article that was written about me in January of 2008 about, forecast wrong plan. I mean, that's still my reputation, is that, you know, I got crushed when, you know, I've actually done pretty well in based on what's happened. But there was that big head fake. But there are still so many people are afraid that that's exactly what's going to happen again, that if there is a sell-off, it's going to be the dollar's going to go up and everything else is going to go down, and it's going to be exactly like it was in 2008. Well, you know what? Not that many people thought that 2008 was going to happen that way. I didn't think it was going to happen that way. So a lot of people got fooled because they didn't think that would happen. Well, now everybody thinks that's going to happen. And so the best way for the market to be fooled is for it not to happen.
Yeah, great. Thanks. One quick question. It's regarding the possibility of you opening an office here in Toronto. Are there any updates on that?
Yeah, we are. I mean, Europe Pacific Canada is, you know, going. We're talking with the clearing firms. I mean, it's all a question of how quickly we can do it. Maybe best case scenario, 3 months, maybe 6 months at the outside. But yeah, the office will be open. I mean, you know, it just takes time to do it. But it's in full motion.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Peter.
Okay. Take care. Next caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Peter. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. I have two questions, and the first one is about China. And mm-hmm. Given the fact that the dollar's dropped significantly this year and that the Chinese maintain a currency pegged to ours, and therefore their currency has dropped in accordance with ours, and given the fact that the Chinese central bank, or let's just say the Chinese government, has put forward a huge monetary stimulus, there's a lot of liquidity swashing around in China. Do you not see that there is an asset bubble building in China, especially in the stock market?
There is no question in my mind that they're creating too much inflation.
Right.
But the difference between China and the United States is that China is backing all of their yuan with dollars. So they have these enormous reserves. So ultimately they can do something with those reserves to convert them to gold or other assets. So they're, you know, but ultimately this massive increase in money supply, even though it's backed by reserves, it's not like, you know, other countries like Zimbabwe, right? They just print up Zimbabwe dollars, but they got nothing behind them. They're not buying U.S. They're just printing them. China is simply printing enough RMB to buy up all the dollars that are actually being generated by the productive activity of their citizens. So there is real production there, but you know they're accumulating dollars as opposed to something tangible like gold. But yes, I think that there are malinvestments in China, and I think that the cause of it is their loose monetary policy to peg to the dollar. I'm trying to buy the stocks that I think are going to do the best when those policies are reversed. And, you know, and we're trying to buy stocks that are still at relatively lower PEs companies that I think are going to continue to grow. But ultimately, too, remember, when the Chinese stop that, the value of their currency will appreciate dramatically. So even if the value, the nominal, let's say the RMB price of the stock goes down by 50%, but the value of the RMB triples, that stock is still going to be more valuable, right? You're still going to have more, you know, it's still going to look like it's going up. Because I think that's going
to
be a key. Yes, yes. So where they might go down from the perspective of a Chinese investor, I think they're still going to go up quite a bit from the perspective of a U.S. investor.
Right. Okay. Okay, so you don't necessarily
see... And I think the best thing that can happen to the Chinese economy is that the government stops propping up the U.S. economy. You know, if you want to see something funny, I don't know if you know, you should watch it. It's on YouTube. I favorited it on my YouTube channel, but there was the Saturday Night Live did a skit on this weekend spoofing President Obama's press conference in China. If you haven't seen it, it's hilarious. But it shows that the people at Saturday Night Live, they have a better understanding of economics than most economists.
Actually, as a matter of fact, today I went to look at your site and because I saw your video blog and you referenced that in the blog and actually from your Schiff report, it was removed. It was taken down. I mean, the link from your Schiff report is not removed, but when I went to click on it, it said that this was taken down because of a copyright.
Oh yeah, so maybe they did. So maybe you got to find another one.
Universal.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, you got to find another one then. I mean, that one had like 200,000 or 300,000 views when I put it up there.
Right, but that's besides the point. I'll try to find that. Okay, the second question is then, when it comes to, you know, some time ago you had said you can't own paper, you got to own assets. And given that statement, do you feel that the fund that you recommended in your original Crash Proof book, the Mercard Currency Fund, that it is that a vote of no confidence in the Mercard Currency Fund?
No, I mean, that's for people who do want to own paper. If you want to have some cash, at least have foreign currencies, right? At least own some currency that's not the dollar. So if you're going to own currencies, own the euro, own the Swiss franc, own the Australian dollar, own the Norwegian krona, own the Japanese yen. So we do that for people. We buy foreign government bonds for our clients. We buy, you know, money market instruments through things like that, Merck Fund. But, now I still recommend those things. And, you know, again, that's sold by prospectus. So if anybody is interested, they got to read the prospectus and understand the risks and everything involved in that.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I guess I can see the board now. I'm at home. Next up is Judy from Illinois.
Hi, how are you, Peter?
Good. How are
Peter,
you?
In looking at the at your books and at the gold and other ETFs and spiders, what are the costs incurred in those, and how are they covered?
What do you mean? The cost of to buy an ETF?
Well, somebody's got to pay to store the gold or transact the transactions, and there's certainly got to be some administrative costs with the fund. How are those covered? Who pays for them? How are they wrapped in? And what are the commissions?
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, fees are going to differ. You know, we just charge a commission at Europe Pacific Capital, or unless you're in my managed account, then we manage money and we charge you a fee. But, you know, different funds or ETFs have different management fees built into their cost structures. You can research that. Or again, you know, if you have questions that specific, call up, one of my brokers and talk, to a broker at 800-727-7922.
Well, what are those costs? What do they range on average, and how are they paid?
They're so different, and I think it's just not an interesting conversation to have on the radio. But I think it's a conversation that you can have.
Assuming that they might be even only 1%, who pays for them?
I don't know. No, well.
Does a broker get a commission on ETFs?
No, if you buy an ETF, whatever the fees are, the management fees are being assessed to you through the share price of the ETF. I mean, you're paying all the fees as the investor. But anyway, as I said, call up 800-727-7922 and talk to a broker. But talk to a broker. I mean, that's what they're there for. There's no commission to talk to the broker. But if we buy it for you, then we'll charge you a commission. But that's just to buy it.
The ETF.
Whatever the price is, it's on the exchange. You know, it's like a stock. They trade.
There's exchange price, or do you add a commission in?
Well, I add a commission to everything. That's how I make money. I'm a broker. But if we do things through our managed accounts, then we don't add a commission. So if we were to buy somebody an ETF through our managed account, we simply charge an annual fee to manage your money. We don't charge you to buy.
So if I want you to buy me 100 ETFs of whatever, you will add a commission to that above the price?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
everybody will.
You
can go to a discount broker. You can go to a discount broker, and they'll add a discount commission. Then you go to me, and I'll add a higher commission. Anyway, but thanks for the call. Next up is Kyle in California.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Good.
Peter, I recently invested about 60% of my money with Euro Pacific Capital. I also own about 40% gold and silver, and I feel safe holding these things, you know, here with me. And I have to thank you for the great returns I've been experiencing with Euro Pacific Capital, and, you know, I appreciate everything that you're doing for everyone. But I have my main question is, when the hyperinflation crisis sets in, how will you be able to protect me and make sure that I'm able to get my money back when there's a financial crisis going on and people are scrambling around and there's a run on the banks and you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Let's hope that we don't get the worst case scenario, that the government does the right thing before it's too late. Of course, it's going to be very painful, you know, when they finally do the right thing. But it'll be even more painful if they wait till the hyperinflation. But, you know, the money you have at the Perth Mint, if you have it with me, I think that's safe and sound in Australia. I think the accounts that we have, unless the government seizes them, they should be okay. If there's a temporary disruption, if you can't, if the banking system shuts down, if we can't wire money, if things go down, then you might have a harder time getting to your money, which is why I recommend that people have physical gold and silver coins at their house. That's one of the reasons that I'm starting Euro Pacific Precious Metals. Finally, it should be up and running in December. I've had some, you know, been busy with other things, but I really want to help my clients buy gold and silver and actually take delivery and keep that money with them just in case it gets very bad and you really can't get to some of your other accounts because of problems in the banking system. It's good to make sure you have real money, you know, with you to take care of those short-term emergencies. Knowing that, let's say, your money in your account with me or at Perth Mint is safe, even if you can't get to it right away because of some temporary problem that's shutting down the financial institution.
Okay, certainly, yes.
Yeah.
And,
all right.
I have
worst-case scenario, I mean, I think a lot of people should be taking precautions. I think it makes sense to store food because I do think that not only will the price go up for a lot of foods, especially, you know, things like meats and fish are going to get very expensive. So if you can install an extra freezer in your basement and buy some of this stuff, not only do I think it's going to be a good investment, because I think if you buy meats now and freeze them, I think it's you know, save a lot of money. But, you know, if we have a temporary disruption of the supply chain due to, you know, gas prices or shortages or government-imposed price controls or all kinds of things, there could be real shortages of a lot of basic food items, and there could be long lines to get them. So why not stock up on some of these things now? I think it makes a lot of sense to put, you know, a backup generator if you have your own, if you can generate your own power, because there could easily be blackouts and rolling blackouts. And to the extent that you can have a, a power supply, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, certainly. I've been stocking up on such things as toilet paper and toothpaste and just general items throughout that I've noticed.
Yeah, shaving cream, razor blades, all that stuff.
Yes, certainly. And I just have one more question. Yeah. Also, when I think the previous guy may have asked a similar question to this, when the U.S. dollar drops and hyperinflation sets in, what will the other currencies, such as the renminbi, feel the effects of the inflation? I think that you may have possibly kind of answered this one already.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, yeah. Well, I don't. You know, the other currencies, if they break, if they stop following our lead, if they let their currencies go up, obviously, if we have hyperinflation and all the other countries decide that they have to, you know, follow us, then the whole world's going to have it. Everybody's going to print. But I think the world is not going to be that stupid. It's like, you know, if we jump off a cliff, is the rest of the world going to be stupid enough to jump off it too? I think not. You know.
Yeah.
So I think they will abandon this those monetary policies. Anyway, I got to drop the call roll because I want to switch to a landline. So anyway, thanks for calling. We'll play a quick commercial. We'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hi, I am back, and we're still taking your calls live, 888-678-9597. Hey, one thing I wanted to point out, because I know a lot of people are interested in that, they follow me. You know, I've been a big, early warner of the housing bubble and a big proponent of renting versus owning, and I've been renting houses for years. And I actually, just over the last couple of days, made a decision to buy the house that I'm now renting. And I wanted to kind of explain my thinking so people understand why I did that. I mean, first of all, I think real estate prices are going to keep falling, particularly for, the higher-end homes, of which the one that I've been renting. And so I bought the house not thinking that it was going to be a good investment. In fact, knowing that it's a lousy investment. In fact, I don't even look at it as an investment. I decided to buy the house because the landlord who owned it really wanted to sell it. And he had been lowering the price. And he finally lowered it to a price where I thought that in this market somebody would buy it. Even though I still think that if nobody bought it, a year from now or 2 years from now, it would be even cheaper. Especially, in real terms, but even in nominal terms, I thought the price would go down. And before I decided to buy it, I looked around a lot of other rental houses to move into. And there were more. I hadn't looked in a while because it was a year since I moved. And I looked around in the Connecticut area for, nicer homes, higher end homes. And there was more of these homes on the rental market than I had ever seen. Believe me. And I've lived in several rental houses. And, I mean, there were so many quality homes on the market for relatively inexpensive rent, compared to I know what a mortgage payment would be or a down payment would be. But I kind of made a lifestyle decision just based on, do I want to keep moving? I thought that it made sense to me at this stage of my life. I also thought that the house represented a small enough percentage of my overall net worth that if I took a huge hit on the value of the house, it really wasn't going to bother me. Earlier in my life, when housing prices were higher and I had, less of a net worth, the prospects of losing a lot of money on the house were frightening. I didn't want to do it. And so I wanted to do something smart financially, and so I rented. And even today, I still think that the smart financial decision, if you're purely looking at the numbers and trying to do something that makes sense financially, renting is still the better choice. But if you're willing to lose money on the house because of other factors that outweigh the money, then buying can make sense. But to give you an idea of what's happened, the house that I'm buying was originally built in 2002, and the original owners, the person who bought it from the builder, that's who I've been renting it for. Now, I paid a price that is 40% less than what they paid in 2002. So 7 years ago, they bought the place new, and now I'm buying it for 40% less than they paid in 2002. Now, of course, it's 7 years of wear and tear, so I'm not buying a brand new house, and I need to do a few things that they might not have had to do, although they did spend a lot of money doing all sorts of landscaping and other things. So, they put a lot more into the house than what they actually paid for it. Now, when they originally put this house on the market 3 years ago, right, based on what they originally offered it for, I'm buying it at 60%, or I bought it 60% below what the house was listed for 3 years ago. Now, that just shows you, what if someone had bought that house 3 years ago? Right, and paid that offer, they'd be down 60% in 3 years. I mean, it's a lot, it's a huge percentage to be down. But even these guys bought in 2002. It's 40% below what they paid in 2002. And it shows you how much real estate has gone down. But you know what? It's still overpriced. It's still overpriced based on what I could rent similar houses for or similar in theoretical value it's still expensive. And based on the maintenance problems that I'm going to have, I mean, based on the, you know, all the other factors, the insurance, the property taxes. But as, you know, from a lifestyle point of view and the fact that, you know, now the house is a small enough percentage of my net worth that it doesn't really matter to me if it gets cut in half, you know, I'm doing it. But for people who are concerned, you know, and most realtors, of course, you know, they try to push houses on people as like they're an investment, like they're going to go up. They're not. And also, if you think about this house in 2002, where was gold in 2002? Gold is more than tripled in 2002. So somebody who bought this house in 2002, they've lost 40%. And that's, you know, who knows what they really lost, because what they really lost is all the years of maintenance, all the years of property taxes, all the other things that were done, right? Of course, they did get to live in the place, but they could have rented like I was, right, and paid less. But what if that person bought gold instead? Instead of being down 40%, they'd be up 300%. They would have tripled their money. That, I think, is still going to happen. Anyway, let me click back to the phones now that I've told everybody my housing situation. But anyway, Jerry, out in Florida.
Hello, Peter.
Hey, Jerry, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? I have a couple of metals questions for you. A few weeks ago, I was able to buy 90% silver coins actually below melt value, and then for a while they were available at melt value, and then they've creeped up a little bit since then. But I was just curious, at that same time, gold bars and rounds were selling for 70, 80, 90, and even more above melt. So I was kind of curious, you know, A, why was it priced cheaper relative to the melt value? And is there some risk, at some point, a possible risk in the future in holding a U.S. coin for its silver value when you can't legally melt it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, they're always there. They are silver. You know, the silver is there. Mm-hmm. And just because you can't melt it down doesn't mean it's not silver. It's still in a coin form. And, you know, generally, by putting silver in a coin form, you turn it into money. When it's just in, you know, in bars, it's not as easily, you know, exchangeable as, you know, and recognizable. But once you put in a coin, and it's a coin that's recognized, people can see its value, it's worth more than just bullion. So there'd be no reason to melt down a coin. I mean, people spend a lot of money to make coins, you know, out of bullion. Now, certainly, if you can buy a coin below its melt value for whatever reason, and then there's a profit in melting it. But I mean, that's not what we're doing. But anyway, mm-hmm. Hey, let me take the next calls. I got two more calls and just 8 minutes left to go. But thanks for calling. Next up is going to be Michelle in Michigan.
Hi, Peter.
Hey, Michelle. How are you?
Good. How are you? I had a question about the Japanese yen.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering if you could explain why you like the Japanese yen, given that I've been reading their debt ratios like 238%.
Yeah, they have enormous debt in Japan, the result of a misguided attempt to artificially stimulate their economy with deficit spending. They're doing the same thing that we were doing, except their economy is fundamentally sounder than ours. They have a lot of production, they have a lot of savings, and a lot of that savings was squandered unnecessarily by the Japanese government. But despite all that, I still think that there are a lot of positives about Japan. And I do think that they are going to have to reverse course. And I think they're going to have to stop borrowing money and allow interest rates to rise. And I think once the dollar really starts to collapse against the RMB, and once the Chinese, you know, let the dollar fall, I think the pressure is going to be off all these Asian currencies. The Japanese will be able to stop their stimulus, because what's going to happen is, when the Chinese currency moves up, all of a sudden Japan is going to have a new export market to export into. That's going to be China. And the Chinese can actually afford to buy Japanese products. The Japanese don't have to lend the Chinese the money. So I think that reckless policy is going to be reversed, and I think that's going to be a big increase in the value of the yen. But I do think the yen is going to lose value relative to the Chinese RMB once that RMB really can float. And I think, you know, there's been the carry trade, too. There's been a lot of people doing the yen carry trade. That trade is being unwound. The yen's going to get bought, you know, and ultimately, you know, I think the currency is going higher. And I think the chart is really
good. So you think it's still okay to buy right now at this price?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to get much yield on the yen, because the interest rates are about as low as they are in the U.S. But I think another way to play it is like the Singapore dollar, because I think the Singapore dollar is going to go in the same direction as the yen, and so that might even be a better way to go.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, we just buy a lot of Asian stocks, and I think, you know, you get the exposure that way.
Hey, you know, like I have a lot of IRA assets. Is there a way, you know, I can
Yeah, call you can you can do all the investments that I talk about. You can do them in an IRA. Just, you know, you can transfer an IRA to your Pacific Capital. Just call up a broker,
okay,
you know, and discuss it. 800-727-7922. Anyway, thanks a lot. Let me hop. I got one more call left. Thanks, Michelle.
Okay,
Jim,
bye.
Jim, you're up. You're last on with Peter Schiff.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Did you know Murray Rothbard?
I didn't know him personally, but I've read his stuff.
Which do you think is his best book?
I don't know. I mean, I really liked the one about the Great Depression. I got that one up on my website.
Yeah, I picked that one up. What about all of the stuff he wrote about, you know, 100% gold dollar and fixing that part of it? Do you think, you know, any chance of going to Washington and getting them to fix the money?
Well, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to, you know, we'll see what happens. I can win the Senate race. You know, I mean, the worst part of the problem is at the Fed, but both Congress and the Fed are to blame, and the judiciary is to blame, and the president is to blame. I mean, every single facet of our government has let us down. You know, there's nobody in Washington in any area of government who's doing the right thing. I mean, they're all culpable. They're all to blame. They're all doing the wrong thing. And hopefully I can go to Washington and shake that town up and try to wake people up. Because the problem is, you know, I can say all I want on this internet radio show. I can say all I want on these cable news shows I do on Fox or CNBC. You know, I can write my books. I can talk till I'm blue in the face. But no one pays any attention, at least nobody in leadership, nobody in Washington. So I think the only chance I have to get these guys to listen to me is to speak as a U.S. senator in Congress. Because if I do that, they'll have to listen to me. The president will listen to me because I'll be there. And maybe what I'm saying will sink in and somebody will, you know, will come to their senses before it's too late.
Could you get up and do an old-fashioned filibuster to try to stop something?
That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to try to get as many other senators or, you know, to go with me, to come with me on this cause, this crusade to save the country from ourselves, because we are doing everything wrong. And I know that. I mean, if I wanted to destroy this country, I would do exactly what our government is doing, and that would do it. You know, if that was my goal, to destroy the United States of America, I would simply implement the current monetary and fiscal policy, and I would achieve those goals. So since I don't want the country destroyed, I want to go to Washington and dismantle these policies. Anyway, thanks for the call. I know I'm running out of time.
I got your email today for the volunteers. I'm looking forward to the next getting started.
Okay, fantastic.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's right. Don't forget, go to the Schiff for Senate website, schifforsenate.com. Contribute all you can. Tell your friends to contribute. Sign up to volunteer. This is a real battle. This is something worth fighting for. We've got to reclaim this country before it's too late. And again, let me remind you, we talked a little bit on this show about investments, buying foreign currencies, buying foreign stocks, mutual funds. Remember, all forms of investments are risky. You can lose money in anything that you do. So consider all the risks. Talk to a broker. Read prospectuses. Make sure you understand and are comfortable with the risks involved in every investment. And always remember that there's risk in holding cash. There's risk in keeping money in the bank and keeping money in under your mattress. There might not be that much risk that you lose your money, but there's a lot of risk that your money loses its value. And that's what's really important. At the end of the day, it's not how many dollars you have, but what you can buy with those dollars. So figure out what risks you want to accept and what risks you don't, and invest wisely and accordingly and do your homework. Anyway, that's it for today. Look, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. The holiday, let's try to think of the things that we can be thankful for instead of all these big problems that we have to worry about. And hopefully, you know, Time Magazine, they just had a piece, you know, calling this decade, the decade from hell. Well, I don't know what they're going to call the next decade, because unfortunately it's probably going to be a whole lot worse. So I think we're going to try to be thankful for the things that we can, because the real decade from hell is not this decade, but the coming decade. I'm going to do whatever I can to try to make our time in hell as brief as possible and as painless as possible. And you guys can help me with that if we can get to the U.S. Senate. Anyway, you've been listening to Wall Street Unspun. I do the show live every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Listen to the rebroadcast on my podcast on the website, www.europac.net. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening, and happy Thanksgiving.